This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
Good morning. This is Derek Haskins, Communications Director for the South Dakota Department of Health. Thank you for joining us for our Friday COVID-19 update call. I'm joined by Secretary of Health Kim Malsom-Risden and Dr. Josh Clayton. I did want to start off at the beginning of the briefing today just to give you an update regarding scheduling for next week. We will be doing two briefings, one on Monday at this same time and one on Thursday at our normal 11:45 Central time. So just wanted you to make note of that. We'll still be sending alerts, but just wanted to make sure you could note that for your schedules. I'll go ahead now and turn it over to Dr. Clayton, and he will provide today's update.
Good morning, everyone. We are reporting 49 new cases of COVID-19 in the state. This does include 4 new hospitalizations as well as 3 new deaths. One is a Jackson County resident and 2 are Pennington County residents. We have 57 individuals who have newly recovered from COVID-19 and 791 new negative tests that have been performed. This does bring our total COVID-19 cases in the state to 6,158. Of those, 801 are considered active infections, and 5,276 individuals have recovered. We have 95 individuals who are currently hospitalized, and now a total of 81 deaths. We've had 65,035 total persons who have tested negative for COVID-19 in the state. We do have one update for our county and community impact map. That is Buffalo County has been elevated to substantial community spread. For our new cases by county, we have 3 in Beadle, 1 in Brookings, 2 in Brown, 2 in Brule, 4 in Charles Mix, 1 in Corson, 1 in Custer, 2 in Hughes, 1 in Lawrence, 3 in Lincoln, 4 in Lyman, 1 in Meade, 1 in Minor, 13 in Minnehaha, 1 in Moody, 6 in Pennington, 1 in Spink, 1 in Union, and 1 in Yankton. For new cases by age range, we have 9 in the 0 to 19 year age category, 15 in the 20 to 29 year, 7 in the 30 to 39 year, 3 in the 40 to 49 year, 9 in the 50 to 59 year, 2 in the 60 to 69 year, and 4 in the 70 to 79 year. For new cases by sex, we have 22 that are male and 27 that are female. For the deaths, we have a total of 6 in Beadle, 2 in Brown, 1 in Jackson, 1 in Girald, 1 in Lake, 1 in Lincoln, 1 in McCook, 1 in Meade, 54 in Minnehaha, 11 in Pennington, 1 in Todd, and 1 in Union. For deaths by age range, we have 1 in the 20 to 29 year age category, 3 in the 30 to 39 year age category, 5 in the 40 to 49 year, 12 in the 50 to 59 year, 13 in the 60 to 69 year, 7 in the 70 to 79 year, and 40 in the 80 and over. For deaths by sex, we have 36 that are male and 45 that are female. We're beginning to report on our deaths by race just as a Friday update, and we'll eventually have that posted to our website as well on a weekly basis. For deaths by race, we have 51 that are white, 15 that are American Indian, 2 that are Asian, 1 black, and 12 that are in the other and unknown areas. For our cluster updates, we have no updates on the Smithfield Foods cluster. We have 161 of 166 employees of Demcota that have recovered. 103 of 123 Jack Link's employees have recovered. 55 of 82 Dakota Provisions employees have recovered, and we currently have 39 residents and 16 staff that are part of the Aventura Arrowhead cluster. And that is the update that I have. I'll turn it over to Secretary Malsom-Risden.
Just one short update for folks around the long-term care mass testing. We have completed tests for 18,427 people. That includes 8,182 residents and 10,196 staff. That represents 98% of all staff and residents in nursing homes and assisted living centers in the state. We've seen a total of 49 residents test positive and 33 staff test positive from this mass testing. We'll now be working to provide sentinel testing at these facilities so that we can, and that will happen on a weekly basis so that we can determine if we need to do more aggressive testing of these facilities into the future.
All right. I'll unmute our lines and we will take your questions.
Yes, JP from KORN Radio.
Go ahead, JP.
Yes, Madam Secretary, could you explain what sentinel testing is?
So sentinel testing is basically randomized testing of a small number of individuals who have previously tested negative to determine if there is any unsuspected COVID happening in a particular place. And so in the case of long-term care, the state public health lab has sent test kits to facilities across the state so that on a weekly basis, they will be testing two asymptomatic staff and one asymptomatic resident so that we can monitor potential COVID activity in these facilities moving forward.
Thanks.
Next question.
Hi, Ray from Killeland.
Go ahead, Ray.
I have a question related to contact tracing. Can you give us more details on maybe where some of these residents are actually getting exposed to COVID? Is it, you know, larger parties? Is it at work? Is it at restaurants? What can you tell us about that?
Sure. So there's through our investigation, we do look at where individuals had been in the time when they may have become ill, so looking at that 14 days prior to symptom onset. And, you know, we, you know, don't have any specific, specifically identified areas that individuals have been getting exposed. The majority of what we're seeing, you know, are cases in which either they have been exposed as a direct result of a case that they've been identified as a close contact, they've been tested, and they are a case of COVID-19 from that exposure. But the vast majority of individuals have just been community dwelling individuals who there's no specific identification of what their exposure was. Which is by its nature the definition of community spread when we're not able to tie individuals back to a specific exposure. And so the majority of the cases that we're seeing are those community spread, and that is reflected in the community impact map because each of the counties, based on the number of community transmitted cases is where they get to from that none to minimal to moderate and to substantial community transmission.
Thank you.
Next question.
Jackie with SDPB.
Go ahead, Jackie.
Thanks. I have two questions related to the back to normal plan for nursing homes and other long-term care facilities. My first question is I wonder if Secretary Malcolm Rising can explain then the difference between the sentinel testing that we just talked about and the point prevalence survey testing that happens if a home regresses.
Thank you for that question. So sentinel testing, again, is that small sample of asymptomatic people just to detect possible COVID that is not readily visible. Point prevalence testing is when we see a positive case in a place like a long-term care facility, where we would like the facility then to conduct additional testing based on the circumstances of the positive case. So that could be a situation where you have a resident on one wing who
you know, has been visiting other people on that wing. We would want point prevalence testing of the residents and staff that worked in that wing. It could also be, you know, different, you know, it could be the entire facility based on the circumstances of the positive case. But point prevalence is when you get in after finding a positive and conduct additional testing to try to control the virus.
Okay. And then my second question is just kind of a summary of how facilities move from more to less restrictive phases, and then what would trigger moving to back to a more restrictive phase.
So the two things that really play into how facilities will move through these phases are whether they're in a county with community spread of COVID. And again, as Dr. Clayton just explained, that means there's enough COVID in that geographic area that people are becoming infected without a known source. So whether there's community spread of COVID in that county or not is one of the factors. The second factor is whether there's been a confirmed case of COVID within the facility residents or staff. And so depending on those two factors, facilities will move up and down kind of the phases as appropriate.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next question.
Gordon Richard, Alcester Union.
We'll go to the Alcester Union.
Yeah, I've been reading about the long haul COVID-19, where people are not fully recovering. Dr. Clayton, are we seeing that in South Dakota?
Definitely, there are long-term sequelae from COVID-19 infection. You know, a lot of what we're seeing in individuals who, they may have recovered from our, using our definition, which is recovered to the point where they're not able to transmit the virus. But there are a lot of ongoing, I think, medical concerns that they have, individuals who are, in the more severe cases, still requiring mechanical ventilation or longer-term care, and that could be either in the hospital or in a long-term care facility. So, you know, we know that similar to the way that COVID-19 spans from, you know, more mild to severe infection, that sequelae also spans from, you know, individuals who have fully recovered and are kind of normal functioning at this point, to individuals who do have some long-term issues that they're dealing with related to their infection.
Next question.
Jack Cottle, KEVN and KOGA. Can you give any more information about what's happening at Aventura, Arrowhead? We have gotten messages here, people questioning whether there's been a large number of deaths there.
What I would say is that, you know, we do report out on the total number of deaths that have occurred, in communities, so by county. We don't report specifically deaths that have occurred, among specific employers or, you know, within long-term care facilities. What I would say is that, this would be specific to where Aventura Arrowhead is located, but the Pennington County themselves only has 11 deaths in total. While the numbers have increased today, that is not necessarily a reflection of them occurring in a specific setting such as a long-term care facility.
Next question.
This is Mark from the Black Hills Pioneer.
Go ahead, Mark.
Are you guys finding that COVID patients are having hidden illnesses flare up because of COVID during their recovery?
I guess I'm not exactly sure, what we mean by hidden illnesses. I think any time that you're interacting with the medical community, that does offer an opportunity to identify things that you may not have normally gone to a medical provider for, whether that's through the provision of kind of more routine care in an outpatient setting or in a hospitalized setting for those individuals who are hospitalized.
Mark, if you're referencing underlying health conditions, certainly folks that have conditions that affect their respiratory system are going to be, you know, probably impacted more dramatically with COVID. We also know that folks with heart disease and diabetes also fare worse if they become infected with COVID.
All right, we have time for one final question.
JP from KRN News Radio.
Go ahead, JP.
Thank you very much. Do you have a start date yet for the testing at the congregate living facilities, and how long do you expect that'll take?
JP, we can sure follow up with some more details. I don't have those in front of me, but we've already started our next round of testing in congregate facilities. But we'll follow up and get you some more detail.
Thank you.
All right.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you all for joining us this morning, and we will talk to you again on Monday. Thank you.